Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Debbie Whitfield, Deputy Chair of New London Architecture, and delighted to be chairing this session on the future of Euston. With High Speed 2 now bestowed with royal assent, Euston can now genuinely be hailed as Central London's last major development site. Similar in scale to King's Cross, the project unlocks 21 hectares of developable land right in the heart of the capital, with the potential for over 2,000 new homes and 16,000 jobs. With this comes the opportunity to radically improve public space, reconnect communities, and those that have been disconnected, and really deal with permeability of the area. HS2 are in the midst of procuring a development partner to work alongside key stakeholders, including Network Rail, Camden Council, and GLA, to take this forward. And yet there are still some possible hurdles to overcome if Euston's potential is to be really realised. At least the ongoing uncertainty around Crossrail 2 is a big factor, as is also the need for any future redevelopment plans of the existing Network Rail station to be properly integrated. In this briefing, we're going to be hearing from many of the key players driving forward this potentially transformative project. Starting from my left, we have John Millwood, who's Head of Real Estate Development at Deloitte Real Estate. Then moving along, David Biggs, who's Managing Director of Network Rail Property. Then we have Councillor Phil Jones, who's the Cabinet Member for Regeneration, Transport and Planning at the London Borough of Camden. And last but not least, Simon Pitt-Keithley, who's Chief Executive of two bids, Euston Town and Camden Town Unlimited, and also the Mayor's Champion for Small Business. We're going to kick things off with a presentation from John, who's been advising HS2 on the business case for overstation development and the procurement process to select a development partner. We'll then hear from each of our panellists in turn, have a bit of a panel discussion, and then we'll open up to questions from the floor. So, over to you, John.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to just set a bit of context for the site and bring you up to speed with exactly what is happening on Euston. Unfortunately, we're in the middle of a procurement process at the moment, so I can't ask the difficult questions like who are the developers or which ones we're going to select. That's going to be later on in the year. But I can give you a little bit of background about where we've got to and what the process is going forward and why we want a master development partner early in the process. So the unique part about this project is that the landowners, effectively the Secretary of State for Transport and also Network Rail, are pooling their land resources to create a development site of around 54 acres, which encapsulates the new HS2 station, which is subject, obviously, at the moment to compulsory purchase following the royal assent earlier this year, and the Network Rail freehold, which exists across the existing station and then onto the front, onto Euston Gardens and up to Euston Road. So a pretty exciting, unified piece of real estate, which will link into the HS2 network, which you'll have seen in the papers, but just as a reminder, that's where it goes, and that's where we are aiming to land people from in the new Euston hub. To put the property market in context in Euston, King's Cross has had an awful lot of attention, quite rightly. The amazing job that Argent have done there in transforming King's Cross Central into what it is today has been built on by the Francis Crick Institute that's come to the rear of the British Library. We've seen the Halo building developed by Stanhope. And we have seen now the British Library developing again with Stanhope, subject to their development agreement being worked out, the land to the rear of British Library. And there's a sense that this area really is. People talk about biomedical, talk about knowledge centres, knowledge quarters, talk about places where, you know, universities can meet business. But this really is one of those areas that I think will have an influence not only on King's Cross, but also be very, very interesting in the context of what goes on the Euston estate in due course. The objectives I've put up there. What I would say is that this isn't a matter of the government just flogging off land to make a lot of money. Yes, they anticipate that there will be money coming out of this project and it will be reinvested into transport infrastructure. But in the business case that we at Deloitte Real Estate helped the government put together, they included a sum of money which was considerable, £500 million, which was to be put towards the infrastructure to create the decks upon which development is going to be developed. So there is real partnership potential from the government investing ahead of time alongside their investment in the station to create land and opportunity for a developer to come along and build out development. And in that way, they want to create new infrastructure around great places to live, great places to work, and eventually seeing a springboard into the Northern Powerhouse. There are local benefits as well. We'll hear about those from the councillor from Camden, so I won't go through them all, but it is about reconnecting communities. It is about improving the integration of Euston into its environment to get permeability through what is a massive block at the moment of Euston Station and get this area of London really integrated back into its locality. So we went out in February, I think it was, to invite the market to pitch for being the development partner. It was done by OJU. I have to say, OJU is a long and complex exercise, but we are aiming to have a development partner in place by the end of December, which, in my experience, is going to be a bit of a record for a site of this size. But we're pretty confident that we got that in play. So we've been out to the market, and we are now currently with HS2 reviewing the first stage PQQ submissions. What's the development partner going to do? Well, there's three stages, really. The first thing we want them to do is to start to work with the station designs team, with HS2, with Network Rail, with Camden, with the local stakeholders to develop up a master plan and an outline planning consent for the station. That's going to take a long time, and in fact, the development platforms that are being produced as a result of the station are not going to be on stream for about 7 years. So it's a long time investment from a development partner sitting alongside government to help us get the right strategic place for this fantastic new development. Once that's been done, the developer will be drawing down land, firstly in the throat, which is up towards Regent Park, which will probably be more residentially based, and then moving down into the station where there's going to be a big office component, maybe some university, maybe some residential mixed in. We see this as a really important mixed-use, proper mixed-use scheme, affordable housing, private housing, and employment uses. And in the long term, we want that partner to develop out, create value, create a sense of space, integrate all the stations. I think there are five stations, if you include Crossrail 2, which will be hubbing in this area. And we want that developer to be part of it and create a greater state, which they may be part of long term, or they may eventually sell off into some form of investment platform. And the idea is the government will keep a stake in that. Delivery stages is a long-term project. You probably can't read any of that, but that basically goes from 2018, and it says 2035 onwards. We're expecting the relationship with the developer to be 25 years, probably minimum, maybe 40 years. So our long-term partnership is quite challenging in terms of trying to get on board someone who has that extent of vision and can see that far in the future, let alone the issues around, well, how do we justify best value for the government out of that? And we're working through that at the moment. We'll do so during the course of our dialogue. And then finally, just to let you know where we are at the moment, that is our procurement process. The PQQ launch, as I said, was January, February. We're in evaluation stage at the moment. We're going to go through a dialogue phase. It's intended to shortlist down to three parties over the summer, and then between the summer and December, we will be getting towards contract award. And at that stage, the developer steps into HS2's shoes alongside the Secretary of State and Network Rail and starts to deliver the discussions with Camden and the outline planning consent that we all want. You don't need to see that. And I'll leave that up just as a bit of context in case it helps any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. So clearly, David, the existing Network Rail station is a key component of the success of this project. Could you talk us through Network Rail's ambitions and where you're at the moment?
Yes, of course. So first of all, I think following on from what John said about the development, what's really impressive is the way government has come together and funded the lid to the station, if you like, the HS2 high-speed station, to enable the oversight development and all the great opportunity that will bring to us, Network Rail, but to the community, Camden, and the residents in the area. So from our perspective, Network Rail, we've been working on this for many, many years. If we go back to 2006, we had a project which we were looking to regenerate the classic station. Somewhat 2007, 2008 came along, and that was put on hold for a little while. But we've been working very closely with HS2 and DfT, and also together with Camden, on how do we, first of all, make sure the stations are connected, are fully integrated, so there's seamless travel between the various modes of transport, and also more so with TfL as well, how do we link in to those other forms of transport? But from my perspective, running the property organisation of Network Rail, I'm extremely keen, which is how does the railway open up to surrounding communities and encourage business and permeability of the site? I think stations across the country, and Euston's a prime example of this, for too long have been blockers to community and actually blockers to value as well. We have a great opportunity here through the oversight development and the commercial development to draw value from the south side of Euston across the road to the south side of our development site and then progressively through the site and actually bring forward more and more development. It's not going to be quite that simple because the phasing is west to east, as you'd expect. And we at Network Rail are in the process of working out what does that mean for our station, how do we redesign that so it fits in with the new HS2 stations or station, and also takes advantage of working with the development partner for a beautiful, magnificent oversight development that really works for Camden and surrounding businesses.
Thanks very much, David. So, Phil, what's the council's position on the scheme now, and what are your ambitions?
Well, we are also unashamed cheerleaders for this being a massive opportunity. It's not just a once-in-a-generation opportunity, it's a once-in-a-century opportunity for a development site of this size in this location to come forward. So it's really, really important that we get it right. What we think is absolutely essential is for this area and all the stations that are involved, including Crossrail 2 as well, of course, which, you know, there's a question mark over, but we think is an essential component of this because you simply won't be able to get the people away from the station once Phase 2 of HS2 is built without Crossrail 2, so we would urge government to go forward with that. We think that the integration of the two main parts of the station above ground is absolutely critically important. And what we've been concerned about previously is that the HS2 side of the station is moving forward more quickly than the Network Rail side. And there's a lot of issues with design and with financing that need to be resolved so that these two sides are planned and delivered as in harmony with each other. So that's what we've been pressing for. I think there's been some improvement recently. I think everyone is committed to this objective. It's about making sure that we've got the governance processes and the resources in place to actually make that happen. And the outline business case, which is being looked at now for the Network Rail Station, is really, really important for that. In terms of what the council wants from this integrated station, comprehensive redevelopment, we want a world-class transport interchange. We want a substantial amount of genuinely affordable housing. We want a lot of jobs that are suitable for local people, but we also want to support those creative and knowledge-based sectors that we have in the area. The Knowledge Quarter is something that we strongly support. It's of global significance, and it needs to be part of this Euston station regeneration as well. We also want permeability across the site. You can't really cross east to west between Euston Road and Camden Town at the present time, mm-hmm. at least not without going up a load of steps and down again through the station. So that needs to be sorted out to knit together the area. We want substantial open space as well for the local community. It's important to recognise that Camden residents are going to be extremely severely affected by this development up until 2030. So we want to ensure that there's a successful and ambitious regeneration project, but it also delivers on the priorities of people in Camden as well, including the business community. We're actually doing a planning brief, and I'll finish at the present time, which puts into more detail the Euston Area Plan, which is the planning framework for the area. We're working very closely with the Mayor and ground with the GLA and with Transport for London on that. So I would urge anyone with an interest in this to have a look at the principles. The consultation's open until the 3rd of July, and we're hopeful that lots of people with an interest in Euston will respond and help us to shape what the expectations are.
Very good. Thanks, Phil. And lastly, Simon, the Euston bid was established last year to help make sure this project actually did provide a positive impact on local business and led to regeneration. What are you doing and what's your take on the whole project?
I'm just wondering whether my job on this panel is to violently disagree with everyone or to be a bit of a fly at any moment. Yes, the Euston bid was established actually because of two bits of key lobbying we did around the original plans for HS2, and I think that sense of a sort of more nuanced argument in a rather feral environment was quite useful and gave us the idea that a bid in Euston would probably be very helpful. Not least because I think there's a kind of general issue when it comes to development, and I don't think this is any different in many ways, which is that when we use the word community, we never think it includes the occupying businesses. Now, what we want from the end result of this is all the things that have been talked about here, and I absolutely support, you know, particularly Phil's points about permeability and the community. But the tax that's going to be paid, the jobs that's going to be created, and the character of the area will be formed by the occupying businesses who end up in those spaces. And traditionally, they are completely left out of this process. And I think we as a business community have tried quite hard to engage, and I think we've had some successes. But I still think there's quite a lot that we have to contribute, that because we're not the big players, because we're not putting vast amounts of money down, I think we tend to get left out of that. So I think my big plea is, I'm saying this to the industry here in a sense, not just on this project, is to start thinking about the role that occupying businesses play in all developments. With this one particularly in mind, I think, you know, we've done our own master planning. I don't think anyone here would have seen it, but we have, actually you have, Phil, but you know, we have been doing this stuff and almost sort of knocking on the door saying hello, and they have these community events, but businesses, you know, never seem to get a word in. The only business forum that's been organised was organised by us. And I think, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a fault of all the players involved. It's just that's not part of the form. What I think is peculiar about this event, this development, is all the things that have been said about a once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's also one of the rarer opportunities when the public sector is behind an investment. And at those times, you can take into account the bigger GVA-type benefits, the job creations that come, the increase in business rates that aren't just confined to what a developer would normally take into account. And I think that's a big opportunity that we need to properly factor in. I also think that we're still, and I don't think, again, I'm not really having a pop at anyone here, but I think we're still thinking about this as if it's going to be a station that opens tomorrow. In 25 years' time, does anyone really think they're going to be diesel taxis driving up at the back of this station, picking people up? And I think we're still caught in this very kind of traditional way of thinking about something on this scale, both size and time. So I'd sort of encourage a lot more kind of imaginative thought. And one final point, I think, just again coming back to my community point, is lots of talk about we have to do it in a certain way at a certain time because railway engineers say this or developers say this. At the same time as saying to the community, we want your input. We want to understand what you want. How much engagement happens is, you know, an argument that will forever rage. But while you're knocking down buildings and pulling up trees, at the same time as saying, we haven't got a plan and we don't know quite what it looks like and we want you to contribute, no matter that you can explain that technically, you're sending a very, very mixed signal to the community that you say you want to engage with and understand and help be part of the process. So I think we just need to kind of step back a little bit and see a little bit more from the community's perspective, and I mean community in its broadest sense, particularly including the occupying businesses. And perhaps try and step out of those shoes that everyone in this room inhabits all the time, whereby you do understand the technicalities of this stuff and the detail of it and why it needs to be done in a certain way. And that would be my big plea, really. I'll stop there. I could say more, but I'll probably come back to it.
Thanks very much, Simon. I mean, clearly we've heard about the incredibly long timescales that are involved here. We've also heard about the multiple, not just master plans, but planning frameworks that are going to be guiding various elements of this humongous scheme. How are all these elements being integrated together, John?
It's part of the reason why we, or HS2, decided to get a master plan developer on board early, because we recognise that, you know, the council has a responsibility and will want to shape policy through its planning framework, including the planning brief. The community, I hear all the concerns that you have, Simon, and I think, you know, the response of that from HS2, Secretary of State and Network Rail, actually has been incredibly positive from what I've seen, and they want to be interfacing, they want to be talking to everyone, all the stakeholders. We will, over the next 12 months, be working with the existing station master plan team, who are putting together a master plan which broadly develops the HS2 station and what that will look like up to RIBA2. And as part of that, they'll look at the shape of the overstation development as well. The development partner will then come on board. Part of the selection process is actually asking them for their thoughts and their vision for the site for the future. That will be melded with the master plan that's currently being developed up. And by the time we get to January, we've agreed with Camden that we will sit down with their master plan team and our master plan development partner to basically work on what I hope will be one integrated, agreed development. Now, there is bound to be discussion around the edges. I mean, we, by the very necessity that it's a public procurement process, and you can't go banding around all the bidders' ideas to everyone all and sundry during the procurement process, there will necessarily be issues that we'll have to iron out early on. But we've got a while to do that. I believe we've got the framework to do it. We've got Camden, who are in a very good place and open to discussion. I think we're open to a lot more of the objectives that you've talked about around social and economics. And so I think it will end up with one integrated plan. But that's probably going to be worked on over the course of the 2018-2019, and then it'll develop into an outline planning application for the whole site.
Okay. I mean, we've talked about those two big unknowns, if you like. So firstly, funding for the Network Rail station redevelopment, and of course also the big elephant in the room, Crossrail 2. How viable is all this without there being some certainty around those two elements, and how will a development partner, who's going to be on board fairly soon, going to be able to approach this without that level of certainty in place? Perhaps, David, you want to...
Well, I feel that the having a development partner on as soon as possible is essential, because actually being able to engage with the station design team on the HS2 side in particular, that's exactly the sort of discussion that we see that we want to, if you like, safeguard the oversight development but also maximise its potential, without in any way hindering the functionality of the station. Our engagement with both the master, the development partner, and also the HS2 station design team is essential in trying to work out exactly how we can then adjust our station to best fit with that. And although the principles are agreed, the details are coming through, and also the details of how do you build it and keep a classic side station open. Because one of the factors we're very nervous about is we want to keep as much capacity in Euston for the community and for businesses as we can through in the build stage. So that's so I think that's essential that we're involved. I think it's also essential that over the next year or so we receive the funding we need to be able to carry on the design of what the classic side station will be, as the designs of the HS2 station become a lot clearer and the oversight development aspirations become clearer. It's exactly the right time to merge that. And out of that will become a natural timeline that, one, keeps the station functioning to meet passengers' needs and neighbours' needs, but at the same time reduces the construction period as much as possible.
And is that funding decision looking likely in that sort of time? Well,
we're in the process of putting our bid into government for what we call control period 6, which starts in May 19. Mm-hmm. So all those discussions are onward going, and it's looking very positive.
Fantastic. Phil, clearly Camden have been through a not dissimilar exercise in some senses through the King's Cross redevelopment, and I presume there's been some looking into the economic impact that Eurostar has brought in terms of jobs to the local area. Are there the same expectations for HS2? What's your ambition and hope for the impact that will have for the economy in the local area?
I think there's a lot of similarities with King's Cross in terms of the scale of the opportunity, and also the council has shown that it can deliver as a partner in terms of being a planning authority and being flexible, and it helps that Argent are a partner that want to be there for the long term. Yeah. And see that value can be driven by working with the community and with the council and by having quality rather than just going for short-term solutions all the time. So that's similar. I think on the other hand, it's different because the King's Cross area was very much derelict land, a lot of it, or unused land or underused land, whereas at Euston it's a much more constrained area, and so the impact on the community is much, much greater in terms of disruption, air quality, noise, pollution as well. So there are differences there as well. But we would hope to be able to work constructively with whoever the master development partner is. We have an open door to any prospective master development partner, and we would want to work proactively with them about on the community's ambitions, just as we have an open door to all the people in the community who are worried about this as well. We see our role as trying to draw together the different strands, and we've been pleased with the input that we've been given into the master development partner process already. So we'd like to continue with that to try and get as good a result as I believe that we've seen at King's Cross.
And Simon, what is the mood amongst the local business community? And I guess what's the thinking around the ambitions that have been very clearly stated around a new knowledge quarter in terms of the sort of new sort of occupiers that the scheme is going to be looking to attract?
I think the existing community is totally on board with the permeability point, the diversity of business input, the knowledge quarter stuff, creative industries, that it should reflect Camden. I think that's important. And that isn't just knowledge quarter, actually. It's about creative industries. It's about a cultural offer. I'd like to think of it going all the way from the Roundhouse to York Way and across to Warren Street. That triangle is kind of the area of influence I like to think of it. But I think there's an important thing coming back to the Argent site. And I think Argent are a great developer. They're a great scheme. But 30 years ago, the collapse in availability of affordable workspace hadn't happened. And the thing that I get a call about probably once a week is from a whole variety of different, it can be a micro business looking for their first space, and we do provide free space to certain micro startups in one of the organisations that I run. Or it can be a medium-sized business looking for a reasonable-sized space. The dearth of space in London generally is becoming a real and serious problem, which comes back to my point about when the public sector makes an intervention like this, that is the opportunity to really kind of ramp up and look at what the gap is in the market and will be in 30 years' time, or at least in 10 years' time, maybe. So I think that's the biggest concern, is that it's going to just follow a traditional development model, or it will say, Google works well and the university in Argent, so let's copy that. And those aren't bad things. But it won't reflect the current and future needs of that triangle that I've articulated. I think that's the biggest concern.
Is there anything, Phil, that you can be doing as a council through the planning framework work that you're doing with Studio Egret West to try and put some principles in place to ensure that that is considered?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Studio Egret West work. We've done a lot of visioning work about lots of issues, actually, in terms of meanwhile uses, how we can use different buildings around there. Simon's organisation does some excellent work with some of the empty buildings there, and we've already got planning blight in Camden because people don't know what's happening, and we don't want there to be empty buildings when they can be used much more productively to support regeneration and the creative industries of Camden Town. But also that work looking very much at how we establish green corridors, because we're losing so many trees in Camden due to this project. so much open space. People are really genuinely very upset and angry about it. So anyone who wants to develop in this area needs to look at those type of issues as well, how we ensure that there's enough green, open space, mature trees for people to enjoy while this is all going on up until the 2030s. You know, kids are going to be born and grow up and live their whole life under the shadow of this project. So it's very important that, A, there's a fantastic result at the end, but B, during that time period, it still works as a place for the community that exists at the moment.
Okay. And John, I believe that you're active in some other development sites in the area, the British Library's plans for redevelopment there. Can you talk us through a little bit about that and how that might impact on future occupiers here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an enormous amount of excitement around the Francis Crick Institute actually locating next to St Pancras Station, and the British Library for their own expansion needs actually, rather than to create a development site for others. Have come forward with a proposal to develop the land to the rear of the British Library, and there's no secret, it was in the press. Stanhope have been selected, not signed yet, but the expectation is that being next to the Crick is almost full, I think, if not, it's full already, and there is going to be a sort of honeypot effect where other similar types of occupiers will want to come into that area. What the British Library have done, interestingly, is they've actually put policies on themselves to say that they want to be central to the knowledge quarter, and therefore they're going to be very close to the decisions that are made by their development partner on who their occupier is and who they share space with. So there is going to be quite a positive input by the British Library, which is quite unusual for a public sector body. You know, 10 years ago, they would have shoved a red line around the site, stuck it out to the market, and just let everyone get on with it. Now, they really do genuinely see themselves as part of that community, part of the future. They're going to be there for another 100 years, so they want to make sure that what goes around them is right. In the meantime, along the Euston Road and King's Cross, business as usual, great occupiers coming in. You've got fantastic universities, university hospital trusts in the area, all of whom are keen to invest and improve in the area. And I see Euston as an opportunity for all those users. You know, whether you're a university or whether you're a straightforward commercial occupier or whether you're in the sort of biotech areas, you will find a place, I'm sure, in the Euston redevelopment. It's 54 acres. It's, you know, two to 2.5 million square feet in HS2, and probably the same again around Network Rail. So there's going to be an awful lot of opportunity there. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 30, 40 years? We might all be, not using trains anymore. Who knows? But we will. Yes, sorry, David. Of course, we'll be using trains. They may be slightly different from the trains that we've got at the moment. Not belch out all that diesel. But it's an exciting time, and you know, the master planning of this area has to look in that type of timescale. You can't put a 2017 scheme on there and expect that to be developed in 20, 30 years' time.
Last question from me before I put it out to the floor. We've talked a lot about business occupiers, but clearly homes is a big priority for Camden and for London as a whole. Camden clearly is wanting to see a good proportion of affordable homes. And yet I imagine that we're looking at needing to go tall in this sort of site. We've also got the existing Somerstown community to be thinking about. Phil, what's sort of Camden's position on in terms of the way that the planning framework is developing around that?
Interesting question. So you're right about there's a viewing corridor that goes straight over this site, but there is envisaged that there could be taller buildings on each corner. But in terms of housing, our planning policy says that 50% should be affordable housing and 60% of that should be social rented and 40% of that should be intermediate housing. We're also, though, highly aware of the Mayor's SPG around 35%. So that's something that we support in terms of a kind of interim between the 50 and what we usually get, which is obviously a lot worse than that. I think the worst possible thing that a developer could convey to the community in Camden would be that there would be a low level of affordable housing here. It's absolutely the number one social problem in Camden, and the council will be seeking to get as much genuinely affordable housing out of this as possible. We're also, though, very, very interested in intermediate rent products and how we can have new types of product which meet the demand in the market in Camden, which is we're very interested in how we keep the squeezed middle in Camden. It's a completely polarising borough, and the council wants to have those middle-income people there as well. And, you know, Google and UCL and all these organisations come to us and say, our staff can't afford to live in Camden anymore, and we need places for them to live, and we want to work with them as well to make sure that we've got those homes for those type of people, as well as for the traditional social rented tenants, and also the very rich people who are also moving to Camden in large numbers.
Very good. Right, questions from the floor. Do raise your hand. Got one down here at the front. You can say your name.
Yes, my name is Patrick Schumacher from Saadid Architects. I just wanted to know about the development parameters. Are we talking about putting a plate across all the tracks, like Hudson Yard in New York, and then building on top?
No. Straightforwardly, no. We have a fair idea about what the HS2 platforms will be, if you like, for development, and those are going to be broadly up into the throat where the site narrows, and then along the side of the tracks and the station. And, of course, there is the area at the front of the station, which incorporates Euston Square, where it's effectively solid ground, so it isn't above the infrastructure. I think the job of the station designers and the master plan party who are going to work with the developer is to explore what can be done above stations, but it's enormously expensive to deck over a station. And if you're in a viewing corridor which restricts you from building terribly high, it's not going to be economically viable to build across the whole station. I think where we can, we will absolutely encourage the master development partners to look at it. But no, it isn't a cap across the whole thing, and just a dark, horrible station underneath, or a nice station underneath.
Any other questions from the floor?
Colin Plank, UCL. Thanks very much, Councillor, for mentioning us, by the way. And just a question, really, about the integration. Not quite sure which member of the panel I'm addressing this question to, but we've been dealing with HS2 over the last few years, and I'm conscious that there will be quite a commercial issue potentially between Network Rail and HS2 in relation to the latter's need to produce their scheme in a timely fashion. Could the panel comment on how that potential area of difficulty is being addressed in the process that's ongoing?
Do you want me to go? To be clear, Network Rail, HS2, DFT are jointly procuring the master development partner to look at the whole site. And we have relationships that obviously reflect the different land ownerships and the different needs in relation to commercial. So those are pretty well worked up. They're not been finalised. We're all owned by government, so government own us all. So we believe we've got a way through that, and it's a sensible way through that. But moreover, one of the things that we've been doing with the HS2 team in particular is actually saying with them, when should sites be brought forward? And if it's on the classic side, and this could be towards the front of the classic station, still on the left-hand side, still on the west side, then actually, if that's the right thing for the oversight development, for how the station works and how it interacts with the community, then we should find a solution to do that. And that's why we are pretty much joined at the hip with the HS2 and DFT on making sure that the working with the master development partner, we bring forward the sites at the right time in accordance with the station building and also the opportunities for a commercial development, whether that's housing or more commercial.
John, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just think I've worked on an awful lot of public sector projects where you have a number of public sector bodies engaged with one another, and it isn't always harmonious, is probably the best way to put it. I think in what HS2 and Network Rail, with the help of the Department of Transport, have achieved is this idea of a land pooling arrangement, where actually it's tenure blind as far as who owns it. How it how it feeds into the future landlord and tenant relationship will be something that, that there will be a Network Rail side and there will be a Secretary of State side. But for the purpose of the development agreement and for the purpose of the negotiation with the development partner, they're going to look at this as one piece of land with some trigger points that require decisions like the development coming forward of the Network Rail station. That is something that we need to deliver in time. But it's always done in a sort of tenure blind way. So I have high hopes for a successful outcome.
Any final questions from the floor? One last one here, and I think we better wrap up.
Stuart Murray from GeoHearn Capital, who's worked with Phil and David on Euston for many years of my former life at GLA. Just to follow on from that question, really, when the appointment of the master development partner comes forward, will they have a real opportunity to influence the direction of travel and secure influence over the master plan and as well as the commercial development to actually ensure we do guarantee that we have a fantastic, world-class integrated station and we get the maximum commercial development value out of that? Or is it going to be more of a number of fixed pieces which the commercial developer is going to have to accept and work around and build up piece by piece?
Good question. John?
Simple answer is I think the former, if that's the good one. I think that the master development partner is being brought on at this early stage to do exactly what you've just described. We're working through the development agreement and we'll negotiate and dialogue the development agreement over time, but it is not a parcel by parcel drawdown land sale for the benefit of getting receipts in on an incremental basis. It is all about the bigger picture. And our evaluation criteria, if I can just be a little bit techy for 2 seconds, the evaluation criteria judging the success of the master development partners' submissions will be very heavily weighted towards the technical side, the delivery side, as opposed to the money side. The money side is, of course, important, but the whole thing is based around everybody, all the stakeholders, all the landowners wanting to deliver exactly what you've said, world-class, integrated, fantastic Euston.
Well, on that note, I think we better wrap up. Clearly, this is a part of London that we will need to be keeping our eyes on over the coming months with some exciting announcements due fairly soon. So if you could all join me in thanking our panel.